Okay, everybody. I want to thank everyone for joining us. It's Thursday again. It's unbelievable. It always seems to be Thursday. Just when you think that it turns around, it's Thursday again. Of course, I say that on Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday, and you know the system. I just recorded the drush, the pre-Shabbos drush, the one that's going out, and I found myself doing a lot of thinking this week. And so hopefully you'll get a chance to enjoy that as well. Learning in the Shul this week is graciously sponsored by the Scheinson family, in appreciation for all that the community has done for them during their recent illness. And as I keep saying all week long, we wish them arichos yamim v'shanim, and I think that we wish that for all of the community as well. I'm going to present two questions tonight. We'll see where we go with them. Question number one, which mysteriously, still fits the model that we've been following for the last number of months, where there is some sort of COVID hint somewhere inside. But let's go with the beginning. There are still drugs that are illegal in different states and countries in the world. In these areas, there is also a robust underground culture that is smuggling and infesting our population, especially our children, with access to these illegal drugs. Now, I work for the DEA, and I've been asked to help with a sting operation that will take place on a Friday night. I know it sounds crazy to ask, but can I argue that participating is some sort of pikuach nefesh, insofar as drugs tend to make children sick, lead to addiction, and all sorts of bad things in life? And if we stop the shipment and make the arrests, who knows how many kids we'll save in the process? So that was the first question. Question number two, which is also open for debate tonight, is my friends keep telling me that the best pots on the market are these cast iron skillets. However, I keep hearing that they need to be seasoned. And so I keep finding these seasoned pots on the internet for sale, and none of them will tell me if the seasoning is kosher. Must I buy an unseasoned cast iron? Is there something I need to do to it? Can I kosher it? And so question again, just to sum up for those who are still showing in or are coming in, question number one, the drug sting with the hidden COVID hint. And question on Friday night. And question number two is the question about the seasoned pots. Any choices?
They're drugs. Both good.
I'm sorry?
Drugs.
What did Devor, you're also into the drugs?
I like them both.
Okay, so we'll see that. We'll see how much time we have. Maybe we'll be able to get to both of them tonight. If not, seasoned pots will definitely get covered, because it is a question I get quite
number
a bit.
Number one.
Okay, so
number one.
Got it. Dina got it. We'll go with number one. Okay, so again, there are still drugs that are illegal in the different states and countries in the world. In these areas, there's also a robust underground culture that's smuggling and infesting our population, especially our children, with access to these illegal drugs. I work for the DEA, and I've been asked to help with a sting operation that will take place on a Friday night. I know it sounds crazy, but can I argue that participating in some sort of pikuach nefesh, insofar as the drugs tend to make children sick, lead to addiction, and all sorts of bad things in life? And if we stop the shipment and make the arrest, who knows how many kids we will save? Now, I've already hinted to you that there's a COVID hint, but or a COVID link to me in my head. But forget about that. That's just my own edification, because as I tell my dear friend Dr. Wenger, what?
Everything is connected.
But that's over. That's neither here nor there. Before we get there, what do I need to consider? You play the posek. What are some of the issues?
Can somebody else do the job?
Okay. Yeah. Can somebody else do the job? But I'm the DA agent.
And there is an issue of Ava.
There's an issue of Ava. How so?
All right.
Well,
if you're the only one in this situation who could do it and you don't do it, then the non-Jewish people say, look at the Jewish people. They're only concerned about themselves. And then when it's time to save somebody Jewish, they'll say, I'm not going to do it.
That's interesting. When can one save? When can one argue pikuach nefesh? I'm surprised you all left that out. When is a pikuach nefesh?
When it's in front of you.
Well, first of all, I have two questions. You just said when it's in front of me, right? So does this meet the criteria? By the way, while we're at it, while we're discussing pikuach nefesh, what is pikuach nefesh?
saving a life.
So saving a life, a physical life, saving a life, a emotional life, you know, we're saving a life, a spiritual life.
It could be all of, could be all of those.
Physical.
Huh?
No, there are cases so where
in the ever popular, an ever popular Broadway play and ever popular movie, right? Called Fiddler on the Roof. I think it became most popular the year that somebody insisted that the rabbi deliver a drasha using that style. Yidle, deedle, deedle, yidle, deedle, dum. Right? But there is an episode, and towards the end of the movie, when the third daughter, who I believe was Chavala, right? She went, ran off with her Goyisha boyfriend and was taken into the church, the big church scene. Right, and the father went to try to get her back, and the mother went. Thank you for the correction. I stand corrected. It's been a while, right? So and was unsuccessful. Now, what would have happened if we wouldn't have been sure? Right, is a person allowed to go ahead and save a life? You know, if that if the life you're saving is really saving more spiritual than physical. Lest you think I'm off the wall crazy, I believe that this Shaila was also addressed in the Holy Land when, I forgot the name of the school, but it was right there on King George Street, right? There was next to a yeshiva system, next to the hospital. So the, you know, where if the kids wound up inside there, they were pretty much finished, spiritually, that is. So the Shulchan Aruch comes along in Orach Chaim Siman Shin Vav Sif Yud Daled and discusses a case where a Jewish girl was kidnapped, Fiddler on the Roof style, and taken into the church. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that it's a mitzvah to travel to save her from the fate of being in the church. In fact, a person who refuses, kaifinan lei, we force him to go. And the Mishnah Berurah there in Sifkat Nun Vav comes along and says it's not just the parents who have the responsibility to put in the effort, but even anyone who can should do so in order to save her, even if it means violating an Isser D'Oraisa. Now, how far does that extend? And what's the basis for that argument? So the Mishnah Berurah adds that it's not that case by every single transgression. If the girl is going to just simply, you know, let's say she's going to violate a different prohibition. This Shabbos, she says that she's going to use her iPhone on Shabbos. And let's assume that using an iPhone to text is an Isser D'Oraisa, which is a debatable point, but we'll even go there for the moment. Am I allowed to go break Shabbos to make sure that she doesn't break Shabbos? I think not. I don't think so. It's only in the case where if she's going to do something once, we don't say to be Mechal Shabbos for her. It's where she where there's a threat to her religious life because she'll be forced to convert, Rachmana Litzlan, and she'll never be able to keep Shabbos again. So then we apply an interesting halachic concept. Chalil Shabbos achas, kedesha tishmor shabbosos harbe. We should be mechalal one Shabbos so that the person will be able to keep many, many more. Now, that question, putting that back into play, I got to ask you a question. Does that apply here as well? After all, if we're asking, the DEA agent is asking to be mechalal Shabbos. I don't know how far the person has to go, but certainly he needs to be involved in the sting, right? And if he's going to be there, my guess is he'll at least have to carry a gun. He'll have to probably communicate over walkie-talkies. He'll probably have to engage in other sorts of practical business. If the drugs reach their way to the streets, it is entirely possible that it will addict not only, like I said, Doc, yes, it's true you have a Shaila of Ava, but unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that drug addiction is not unique to the Gentiles, but rather is found, unfortunately, among the members of the tribes as well, right? And so therefore, could I simply argue, even without relying on Dr. Wenger's Heter of Ava, right, could I simply say that, look, if you become addicted to drugs, you could die. A person who goes ahead and becomes addicted to drugs can wind up doing a lot of different malachos in order to get a fix. will engage in some very, very, very dangerous activities that could lead to all sorts of STDs and other illnesses. He or she could become could engage in stealing and engaging in armed robbery or shootouts. The list of potential dangers is endless. And so, would it be correct to apply the same principle of Chalil Shabbos Achas Kadesha Tishmor Shabbos Osarbeh as well in this case? Yes or no?
Because we're not talking about this person in specific.
Okay.
You're talking about your daughter or your neighbor's daughter or somebody that you've seen grow up in your shul the whole time. We're not talking about that. We're talking about someone who knows whom, Jewish, non-Jewish, we don't know, all right? But it could affect somebody. It will affect, but who is it going to affect? There's no direct on who it's affecting.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent. And here's where you find the COVID curveball. There is a famous rabbi, he's a lovely guy in Queens. His name is Rabbi Ilan Segelman, or Siegelman. Rabbi Siegelman happens to be the American director for Machon Pua. I actually sent out a flyer through the shul for a talk he moderated earlier this week. Great guy. I imagine that, in his shul in Queens, there are a lot of different people. One in particular, earlier this year, had come to Rabbi Siegelman with the following question. I am a medical researcher. I am a doctor who runs a lab in Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan. These were the early days of COVID, April, May time. And there was a pressure like crazy to find a vaccine and a cure. And so he turned to Rabbi Siegelman and he says, Rebbe, Rav, am I allowed to work in my hospital on Shabbos in order for me to be able to go ahead and find a vaccine for the disease? After all, I will only need to violate the Isur D'Rabbanan. I am going to be doing co-save on the computer, which we'll come back to in a second. And even as far as getting to the hospital, so the hospital will send somebody to pick me up. That's how important I am to the process. So Rabbi Siegelman thinks about it, and he gets very, very stuck in his argument. And so he decides to kick the ball upstairs to one of our generation's greatest, Rav Asher Weiss Shalita. And in a tshuva, Rav Asher answers Rabbi Siegelman, and he says, first of all, I think the first thing you need to understand is that in my mind, co-save on a computer, computer writing is a normal way of writing. And so therefore, I'm not so convinced that it's so simple to argue that co-save is a din d'rabbanan. I think it's very much a possibility that writing electronically may be an issur d'oraisa. He says, forget about that for a moment. Let's look at the rest of the discussion. The rest of the discussion comes down to when we define a pikuach nefesh. You know, there's the writing of the No de Yehuda. It appears in Chayal Shachuvas, No de Yehuda, Tinyana, Yeridea, Reish, Yud, where the No de Yehuda says that when it becomes a discussion of pikuach nefesh is only a shaila when a chola is in front of us. The case under discussion is one of the most famous cases in the No de Yehuda. It's up there with the hunting, the smoking, right? And this one. What is this one? The shaila over here was about autopsies. And the shaila became, can I do an autopsy on a person who died, knowing full well that if I study why the person died, I might be able to save a life in the future? And the No de Yehuda said, and so therefore it's pikuach nefesh, and that should be doche everything. And while the No de Yehuda found the argument to be an interesting one, he makes a point of highlighting that you can only argue pikuach nefesh when the person is in front of us. So suggests the No de Yehuda, so suggests Dr. Wenger. You know who else suggests it? The Chasam Sofer. In Shalos Tshuvas, in his Chidushim, in Yerideya, it's in the Shalos Tshuvas, Chasam Sofer, Yerideya, Simen Shin Lamed Vav. And he says that's why a person's not allowed to leave his body to science. You can't argue, I'm leaving my body, I'm doing such a tova, I'm doing such a wonderful thing, because think how many lives will be saved. says the Chasam Sofer, it's a problem. He says, not only that, a person would not be allowed to violate an Issur Derabanan, says Rav Asher, in order to be able to, unless the mace is in front of us. And the same should be true over here in our case as well. The Chazon Ish in Yerideya and Simen Reish Ches, Sifkat and Zion disagrees with the classification of the fact that you have to have Chola Lefaneinu Mamish. And he says, as long as there's a direct link from the Chilul Shabbos to the saving of a life, it would be allowed. Even if the Chola was not immediately in front of us, like he's not in the room next door, but the fact that we can make this direct connection, not some amorphous idea that down the road we'll be able to say that so-and-so would be able to get well. Rav Asher, in responding to Rabbi Siegelman, added the following point. He says, maybe when we're dealing with some sort of crisis that's affecting the whole world, and hundreds of thousands in the world have already died, including our own nation, and even healthy people are in a potential sakana, right? Maybe we have to do whatever we can in order to protect the world. So he says, that's very nice and very true when it's karov levadai, when it's almost guaranteed that what we do will have an effect. He says, however, it's not so karov levadai, right? That because you work today on Shabbos, that presto, you're going to develop the cure that will solve everything in the world. And so therefore, Rav Asher says, I don't think you're allowed to do that work on Shabbos. He ends the tshuva by saying, no offense, this is all a very nice halachic debate and discussion, but he ends off the tshuva by saying it's also a non-issue in regard to the COVID. And why is that? He says, because let's face it, nobody is working for 3 weeks straight or 5 weeks straight or 12 weeks straight. That's how far they were up to at that point in time on a vaccine with no sleep. You're going to work for a couple of hours, and then what's going to happen? You're going to pass the baton to somebody else so you can get some shut eye. So he says, so work Friday and Sunday and let the other guy hold the baton on Shabbos. So he says he didn't see any basis of a heter under those circumstances. And so therefore, putting it back, this account, which Dr. Wenger says is a very nice discussion about the COVID and about autopsies and all those other pieces, Dr. Wenger comes back and he says, based on what you're saying, then the same thing should be true over here in regard to the doing the drug bust on the drug dealers who are bringing the drugs into the country. Yes, it's true that you may be slowing the process of drugs, right? But to argue that it's bikuach nefesh right now, as bad as the drug machala is in our country, and let me add, it's bad, so bad that we're already legalizing it in certain areas, which is, as they say, temple, right? Right? But still, notwithstanding, it's not lefaneinu mamish, and Dr. Wenger would paskin that the drug enforcement agent is not allowed to proceed on Shabbos, correct? Do I have your psak? Yes.
Except the possibility of Ava.
But so again,
this thing has to be looked at close.
So Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein Shalita, who we quote quite a bit in this year, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein in Vavei Amudim of last month, the new volume came out today. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but in volume 87, he notes that the Mishnah Berurah limits. He offers a different reason. He says, you remember the Mishnah Berurah that we mentioned about Chavalah and Fiddler on the Roof? He says, that's when the Mishnah Berurah allows somebody to be Mechalal Shabbos, that's when the person is forced, the girl you're trying to save is being forced into the church. Says Rav Zilberstein, in the name of the Mishnah Berurah, a person who's addicted is not an ones, perhaps. That person made the decision. And he says it's not exactly even. He says also, though, who says the Chilul Shabbos of stopping the drug flow is going to stop the addiction totally? It'll temporarily halt it. Maybe this shipment won't be available. But all that will do is what? Drive up the price, which will do what? Cause the market to get higher. And so maybe for that reason, we would not apply the principle of Chalil Shabbos Achas kedei lishmor shabbosos harbe. I'll tell you what Rabbi Zilberstein does do, right? Which I think Rav Asher would not necessarily agree with. Rabbi Zilberstein adds a different factor. He says there's a Gemara about Mitzion daf pei gimel amid beis, where he tells the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, who used to turn over Jewish criminals into the authorities. And what he would do is he would tell the authorities how in the future you can catch the criminals yourselves. And Eliyahu HaNavi did not agree with his practice, and so therefore he stopped blooming with him. So the Rashba, as cited in the Beis Yosef in Choshev Mishpat Shem Pei Ches, Sif Katan Ches, he argues that Meikra Adin, where Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was doing, was correct, since the people were destroying the world. And people who destroy the world need to be punished. And so Rabbi Zilberstein says, I think people causing addiction is also something that destroys the world. And so therefore the sting may be mutter, but it doesn't mean you can do an Isser Shabbos for it. So maybe what we could do is we might allow the person, if absolutely necessary, to violate Isurim Durabanan. If for whatever reason he's needed to be there to supervise, right, that may be mutter. I don't know if Rav Asher would agree. I'm not sure. Because when it came to supervising in the hospital, Rav Asher didn't think so. On the other hand, like you said before, Rav Asher's argument was, there are other people there who can do it. And in this case, there isn't another person here to do it. And so again, in summation...
Rabbi, there was one...
Go ahead.
Before you sum it, there was a case, I believe, a week and a half ago, where I think they asked Rabbi Lau about giving the vaccine on Shabbos, which would probably be one more step than the case that we were talking about, the guy doing the research on the vaccine, because now we already have the vaccine. And he said if they were giving the vaccine 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that would be a different story. But right now they're not doing that. And therefore he said that it wouldn't be appropriate to give the vaccine on Shabbos.
Right. So... Rabbi Lau seemed to be dovetailing on the ideas of some of the other poskim, who also did not encourage the process. We'll get into that perhaps at another point in time, because in France it may be a very serious difficulty. And it was interesting to see the poskim, depending on where you are, and how they chose to deal with it. I just haven't put the shiur together yet, but maybe we'll put that up for another week, maybe next week. To see where things fit together. But yes, it is interesting that Rabbi Lau, I'll add Rav Asher Weiss, because that shaila came up right away when the vaccine first came out and healthcare workers were being given days, right, and times. And they were told, if your slot comes up on Saturday, you better be here or else. It's interesting because in the United States, that's not what happened. But although that was the threat, ultimately in the hospitals that I'm aware of, the hospitals are begging the doctors and the staff to please come in and get the vaccine. Not that you're being forced. In fact, I was talking to another healthcare individual today, a patient of mine, the second one this week, who told me that, don't worry, the hospitals have told me, oh, if you can't get it this day, we'll give it to you that day. If you don't want it this time, we'll give it to you at that time. Just let us know and make an appointment and show up, right? Halavai, it should be such a so easy for the rest of the people who are waiting. Halavai Vaiter. Okay, let me just touch on the other issue, though, because if we still have a couple, does anyone mind?
No? Well, you were going to summarize before I interrupted.
So I think,
you.
I'm sorry. So in summary, I think that the answer to our shaila is that, I think most poskim would be very clear that to violate an issa d'oraisa for this thing, I don't think you can do it. There may be an argument to say that Rav Zilberstein argues that maybe if you're needed to be there, and you don't have to violate an issa d'oraisa, that there's a possibility to argue in favor. On the other side of it, it's not so clear that everybody would agree. And if it's possible for the sting to take place without you, that certainly would be an ideal. You'll do the paperwork on Saturday night and Sunday, right? But again, like Doc says, you have to consider all the factors to figure out if you must be there or not. I still don't think that an issa d'oraisa would be allowed. Okay? So that's on the first issue. Should we talk about seasoned pots? Everyone got a couple?
Yeah.
Good. This, I think, will go a little bit faster. And I have to credit my dear friend, Rabbi Leibowitz, because I've been thinking about this, writing this up for a while. And then earlier this week, we happened to be going back and forth. And I was listening to something, and presto, good old Rabbi Leibowitz, Kedarko Bakodesh, he just sums it all up in such a beautiful, neat package. Let me first tell you, this too has some sort of reference to the modern news. The history of preseason cast iron pots, its use began in China in the 5th century. So it's not everything we get from the Chinese involves bats and other things. Sometimes the things that we get from them can be General Tso's and other delicious Chinese food, right? And sometimes it comes with technology. There's some great, wonderful things. And the cast iron pots come from China, believe it or not. In the 16th century, it sort of started to get popular in Europe. And it became extremely popular in the late 18th and early 19th century when skillet cooking became extremely common. And so before we started with our own fancy pans system of nonstick frying pans, The powers that be in the beginning of the 19th century, they knew that they wanted to create some degree of a nonstick coating. And also, cast iron pots have one major problem when you use them and when you wash them. You know what happens when you wash things that are metal too often?
They rust.
Correct. They rust, right? And so therefore, they figured out that we needed to create some degree of nonstick coating and non-rusting. And so you needed some sort of protection. And so they figured out if you smeared it beforehand with tallow, with fat, with margarine, with oil or butter, and you heated up the skillet, the cast iron, it would serve and provide a coating that would ultimately protect the pot or the skillet. And that's where the idea of seasoning comes from. Seasoning is really not salt and pepper. It's not oregano. It's not even original. What is it? It's the opportunity to go ahead and coat the pan so that it will be protected. Now, can you self-season? I want you to know the answer is yes. Many years ago, I don't remember how many, my wife decided that she was getting one. And she told me, don't worry, I got it non-seasoned. Go ahead and season. Thank God for Rabbi Google or Dr. Google. And I said, how do you season? And presto, we learned how to use it. I think it came before Pesach that year. And that year, our current chametz cast iron pan, that year was involved in making many, many dishes. I don't remember if that was the year my wife entrusted me to Pesach due to certain deadlines at her job. But I do definitely remember using it. And I remember her telling me, it's great. You'll love working with it. And I did. But the first thing you need to remember is that if you're coating a skillet that you plan on using for fleishigs, please do me a favor. Do not do it with butter or dairy margarine, right? This could really all of a sudden create a certain very, very difficult problem for you, right? But otherwise, you might not have too many problems that come with this pot. The only thing is you'll probably have to remember when you buy it to take it to the mikvah, right? It does need to be taken. So you'll say to me, fine, but if it's pre-seasoned, do I have to take it off in order to take it to the mikvah? Not if you're planning on leaving it there permanently. Most of the time we buy these things, we buy them, you know, we buy them to keep it that way. We coat them, we season them to keep them that way. But right now I haven't discussed buying them pre-seasoned. I'm talking about just getting it. I would recommend toveling it first if you're already doing that, then doing the seasoning afterwards. The bigger question is, can you buy it pre-seasoned, right? And so what do people think? What are the problems I have to think about? Now that you know what seasoning is, what are the problems?
Yeah. Well, what are they using?
Okay, so the most obvious problem is, what are they using? What could be the problem?
It could be dairy. It could be pork. It could be something we can't use.
So the answer is, well, it depends. And if the company tells you that they're only using kosher oil to season, can I trust them? The companies are not hiring mashgiach. They're not paying the OU to come in and check on them. That's for sure the case, right? I'm a cast iron company. Ain't no way I'm going to allow an OU mashgiach to come in and check because it's not worth the investment. So can I rely on something? Yes or no? So Moshe Feinstein.
I think they get no benefit out of saying what they use.
What if they had federal government?
Then you could trust them because you have the federal government require people to be accurate.
Okay.
And then so you have a Marissa okay. It's right. Okay.
So Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe Chelek Aleph Siman Nun Hey makes that exact point. He says there's a penalty for making a false claim. If you use fat, animal fat, and somebody's allergic to it, and you didn't identify that allergen, bye-bye company, right? So Ramosha says there's a mirsas. There's also what we call a milsa de avida legluye. All you need is somebody to go in and check it out, and the company's not going to take that risk. There's a principle of uman lomara umnase. If the company tells you that we use oil, right, they're using oil, not fat. So it seems clear that you can rely on a company's claim. And in Igros Moshe, Chelek Tes, Eben Ezer Simen Mem Dalet, Ramosha wrote to his son, Reb Ruvain, that simply if there's a government punishment for making a false claim, you can rely on the company. So Rabbi Liebert says he spoke to Rabbi Gersten. Who's Rabbi Gersten? He's the guy who writes down all the Piskei Halacha for the OU. He's official recorder of Psak. So Rabbi Gersten says that to Rabbi Leibowitz, this is especially true in the United States, where most of the oil in the United States happens to be kosher. And it's hard to find an oil that's not kosher. So if you're buying a cast iron skillet that was made in the United States, and you know the company says we coated it with oil, which most companies do because it's not worth it to them to use animal fat anymore, right? They're using parve oil and most likely grapeseed oil and most likely kosher grapeseed oil. P.S., and this is not from Rabbi Leibowitz, one of the places they are most likely getting that oil from is from which New Jersey city or township? Yes, you guessed it. Good old Hillside, New Jersey. Yes, there is a place. Yes, one of the major exporters of oil, this type of oil in this country, happens to be from a factory right here in Hillside. I don't know if it's still the case, but I do remember receiving a phone call a number of years ago, about 10 or 11 years ago, from my Rebbe, Rabbi Ganak, who called me and said to me, I want to know if you're willing to get paid. I said, I always am willing to get paid. And he says, good, because I have a job for you. I need you to walk to such and such a location in Hillside. And he gives me this location, which I Googled and realized that it's out of the era, so to wear my bulletproof vest wouldn't have been a problem, but to carry an AK-47, I wasn't going to be able to do so easily on Shabbos, right? To get to that location. But he said that we have a major. I said, what do you need me for? I said, is this Abels and Hyman? He says, no, because Abels and Hyman also was here. I don't know if they're still here, but I think they are, right? But he says, no, there's an oil company, and we just need somebody to occasionally pop their way into the oil company on Shabbos so that we have somebody checking all the time. So, I don't know if it's still that way. And I remember whom I recommended to take the position. And I think he did for a couple of years, and it paid decently for him. It was something that his family needed, and it worked out very well for everybody. But I do think that a person needs to understand that that Bisman Azeh, right, most of the time when you're buying an American cast iron, even if it's pre-seasoned, if the company tells you it was pre-seasoned with kosher oil, there's grounds to rely upon. What if the company won't answer? What if the company will not tell you what they pre-season with? So then we get into a different discussion, because then we probably do need to do something about the situation. But, and if that's the case, we're talking about kashering. But what are we kashering? And this, I turn to my dear Dafyomi friends and the screen directly to my left, because they need to remember, as you all do, that when we talk about kashering, we apply a very important general halachic principle. And what is the general halachic principle that we apply?
Okay. Like the way it gets
done. Very good. As Marvin says in Hebrew, it's kabbalah kachboto. As Devorah translates for him at the same time, the way something is absorbed, that is the way it spits out. Of course, that assumes that the oil is absorbed. And that's not necessarily the case here now, is it? Do we look at
this? I thought that's what seasoning was.
I thought seasoning was oil that gets baked onto the top. Is that called be'en? or is that called balua? If it's be'en, if I got a pot of dirty, crusty, non-kosher, can I just simply boil up some hot water and have the dirty, crusty, non-kosher disappear? Absolutely not. What do I have to do?
You got to scrub it.
Before I can kosher it, I got to scrub it. I got to get off something called the be'en. And so the question over here is, am I dealing with a be'en or am I dealing with a balua? And believe it or not, this matter is a
machlokas.
It's a machlokas. Very good. So the late, great Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz of the CRC, who was raised not too far away from here in good old Newark, New Jersey. So Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, one of the great Gedolim who passed away a couple of, at the beginning of Hanukkah, he felt that the oil was a question of balua. He said the oil was something that got absorbed. And so if that's the case, then the way you kasher it would simply be kibolo kachpolto, with hagala. But Rabelski Zatzal, who was one of the two poskim at the OU, according to Rabbi Gersten, he would say, are you kidding me? The whole point of the seasoning is that it's on the surface. We put it there to make things nonstick and to make the surface of the cast iron impervious to rust. And so therefore, before you'd be able to kasher, you need to remove the ban. If you can't do that, there's still only one thing you certainly can do that would be treated as if you did it. And what's that?
You burn it.
Liban chamer. You burn it in a high heat, which in olden days would be 900 degrees, or what you and I call modern times, a self-cleaning oven. Right? So the shach in Yoredeya, Simon Kuf Chaf Aleph, Siv Katan Ches, Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Orach HaShulchan all seem to support the position of Rabbi Belsky, and the Ramah, the Magen Avram, the Chazanish, and Hilchos Pesach, and others all seem to suggest that no, Haggalah would probably be enough. And so Rabbi Leibowitz turns around and he says, it sounds like in modern times, if you go to four different kashrus organizations, you are going to get four different answers. The answer number one is Rabbi Belsky's answer. And what is that? That Liban Chamor is what you need, right? You do a Liban Chamor, 900 degree oven. You get rid of anything that's on a surface, bada bim, bada bang, and it's all done. So Rabbi Leibowitz says he's not so sure today if today's modern self-clean ovens get hot enough. I don't know. When I bought my self-clean oven, I was pretty sure it got hot enough. But I think it depends how long you run the self-clean cycle, right? Marvin, new problems to think about now, right? New in the buildings, right?
Yep.
So if you can't get it hot enough, so you may need to scrape it and then do a Liban Kal. What's a Liban Kal? A Liban Kal is what we do with a regular oven. You turn it up to 550 for about 45 minutes. That was Rabbi Belsky's suggestion. Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz and the Chicago Rabbinical Council, the CRC, they say that no, you should do Haggalah. Because what does Haggalah do? It gets rid of balua. So first of all, you just understand Haggalah and has a parallel called Liban Kal, which is you can take the same thing, stick it in a regular oven, turn it up to 500, be very careful. Leave it there for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, usually about 45 minutes, and that's the case. Now, if you're doing Haggalah, Rabbi Schwartz Atzal said that you need to remember that you don't have to put the whole thing in at the same time. It's not a mikvah, right? And which is important because usually these skillets are a little bit bigger than the average size pot. And also, you need to remember that it's cast iron, it's thicker. So you're going to probably have to hold each part under the water a lot longer, right? Because you're going to have to wait until the heat is retained. Rabbi Heinemann, which means we're now talking about the star K, he does not talk about Haggalah. He just says, do a Liban Kal. Right? Probably practical. Right? And the COR from Canada, whose primary posek is Rav Shlomo Miller, who is a great, tremendous Talmud Chacham in the Lakewood community in Toronto, so he says, I don't understand the whole point. He says, if the company pre-seasoned, how is pre-seasoning done? They take the oil, they smear it, and then they take the oil and they stick it where?
In the oven.
In the oven.
Baked at the highest heat, says Rabbi Miller. The company did the kashering for you. The company went and pre-seasoned it. Look at that. They kashered. How do you know? When you have a cast iron before you season it, what color is it? It's like a very, very charcoal gray, right? When you're done seasoning it and you're done with the seasoning process, what color is it?
Black.
Dr. Shlomo Miller, it's done for you. So how do we paschalize? It depends which kashrus organization you're following up upon. But brilliant, right? All four positions are brilliant. That's the beauty of halacha, right? That you can find differences of opinion and know which way to proceed. So therefore, I'll tell you what I told my wife. I said, I prefer to season it myself, but I also wanted to learn the process. But if somebody comes up to me, I would say to them, ideally, try to figure out, you know, see if you can get the company on record. If you get the company on record, you don't have to do anything. It's when you can't get the company on record that you have a problem. Most companies, but if you can't get the company on record, you have more problems than just the fact that you can't figure out whether you need to pre-season your pot. You probably want to check again and see why you bought from that company as opposed to the other ones that will probably go ahead and do so. Okay, so two questions, two opportunities, a great opportunity to talk. And Be'ezus Hashem, we'll see each other next week. And we'll have the chance to continue our wonderful learning together. Everyone have a wonderful, terrific Shabbos. Watch out. I think this is a little bit unique. And so, I'll let, you know, read it, but also always read between the lines. I think you will discover and remember the room that you are looking at right now, because there are a lot of voices in here, in this room, that are going to show up in the pre-Shabbos drasha. Hopefully you'll get a chance to see it in advance. Everyone have a terrific night. And a wonderful and terrific Shabbos. Regards to your families.
Thank you.
Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.